You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by footballstadiumprince.com. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case
Elder
scenario for
here
City
for
right
more.
Here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally
Matt
redeems
Elder.
Himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself! Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. Then it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
And Oliver, goal!
It is now 2-0 Minneapolis
City. Oh, yes!
City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Welcome, soccer fans. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I'm your host, John, and with me, as always, is the Nate Morales. Nate, so much soccer on the world's stage has been played with so much more left, but how's it been for you? Have you been, like me, watched every match?
Yes. I mean, I think I skipped a couple of the 4 a.m. matches just because I was a little less interested in them, but I would wake up in time for the 7. Definitely watch those there. I mean, I haven't woken up this early, this consistently in a long, long time, John. So this has been great. And it's always been great to be able to, it's nice to be able to just hit that plus button on YouTube TV and be able to watch some of those early matches later. So yeah,
what I've been doing is like on Tubi, they play them on a loop as soon as they're over. So like for 24 hours, you can watch the game. So like literally it's on in my house
all the
long.
Time.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah. It's been so fun. And it's just been like up to my eyeballs in soccer for a second the other day, I was like, oh man, this is just like too much soccer. Like maybe I'm watching too much soccer. And
you
then
watch your mouth.
I know. And then a game, then like a day like yesterday hits and you're, and it brings it all back. And it's like, no, I had like, what was I thinking?
I know. And then of course, like I put on social media was like, oh, awesome. It snowed 8 inches and my kids have to come home early from school and right in the middle of the US game. Awesome. So thanks Mother Nature, you bastard. Like, why is this World Cup in the winter? Fuck you.
Well, I mean, that's the World Cup is the topic at hand. So today we're just going to talk all about it. It's going to be a good show where John and I are just going to riff and rip on each other for our stupid predictions. We're going to start talking about our Utapils watch parties, which if you haven't been, you got to make it out on Saturday. They've been a great time. The USA and their performance in the group stage, John and I will break down as best we can, given our non-Taylor Twellman status, or Tyler, as Charles calls him. And then predictions. We're going to go back to our group stage predictions, who we had, who was more right. It's probably going to be you, John. Let's get going.
What did Barkley call Mbappe? Mbappe?
Mbappe?
Yeah, he's like, then I got my homeboy Mbappe in France.
It's like an SNL skit. It's like Keenan doing.
Oh, 100%.
It's like Keenan doing them. So if you were out and about during group play and you stopped in at our watch parties, maybe you saw John and I. We were there for the first game for sure. And that, man, it did not disappoint. That place was packed. The games were good. The beers were bought. There was some dope merch on display under the tent. The pizza blazing. We were there, John, but so let's just talk about our thoughts on the events.
Well, I can say this, like, if you're talking about like, were the events successful from a partnership perspective? I think so. I think I was only at the first game because I was out of town for the second game. And then obviously due to inclement weather, was not able to make it this week, but I think it was a success, Nate. It was packed for the Wales game, you know, there, and it wasn't just your same, like, it wasn't just Paul, Bryn, Colin, like, like the coaching staff, Sarah, and like AO, and you and I, it was a bunch of people, it was a bunch of players there. like you mentioned, the Stegman's crew was out in full force. There, you know, there were the casual supporters were there, just general people who were like looking for a place close to them to watch the World Cup. So I think from that aspect, it was a success. If you look at the dollars and cents, what I heard was that
bring out the marketing manager.
Yeah.
Break down the partnership from a business perspective.
Insert corporate speak now. From a partnership perspective, something over like 1,700 beers were sold so far.
Woo!
So if you're talking about $5 a pop, not a bad job. Not put a bad job.
One pager. You're welcome.
Yeah, put on the study.
Mm-hmm.
Write a white paper about it. Any other marketing thing? Synergy, Nate. Synergy.
So much synergy.
So I think it was great. I mean, I think that there's some limitations. You know, I know that during the, even though I wasn't there during the England game, there was like a pre-planned like winter craft thing there. So yeah. The watch party had to go into the side room, which is not large. And if you're talking about the volume we had in the first game, and then moving it to a small side room, that's a lot of people packed in one area. That's a super spreader event. But, you know, we make do. So, you know, you look at that aspect, that was probably the only less than ideal thing. I think if you're talking from a marketing perspective, I think that the club quickly course corrected and was like, all right, we need to get some handouts printed out. We need to be giving people stuff. You know, we need to let them know that the pizza is not from Uta Pills. It's from Minneapolis City Soccer Club and our partner Blaze Pizza. So, like, those like things that we had to learn because we hadn't done an event there in that volume before. I think we course corrected all of it and it was good. And I'm unable to attend the Saturday game. I'm going to be out of town, but I fully anticipate that it's going to be as big, if not bigger, than any of the games that we've had there so far.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. I will be. Would you believe that the boy has a game at 8 a.m.?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah. So I will be screaming at everyone in whatever dome we're in. No spoilers. Stay off your phone. Everyone shut up. And we're going to come home. And
bring some headphones and just listen to like a podcast.
Yep. We're going to come right home and have our own delayed watch party. That sucks. So I won't be able to make it. But this Saturday, 12-3, the USA versus the Dutch, $5 beers. For free pizza. God, that pizza was good too.
So good. So good. It wasn't even just like your typical like cheese and pepperoni. It was like, there was like a meat lovers. And
they had a barbecue like chicken that was like banana peppers and some sort of like goat cheese. It was fucking rad.
Yeah.
And of course, tons of space in the tap room, free parking all over that complex. You can actually have a spot, get comfy, watch the game. It's going to be a good time. City merch will be there. Of course, the new football town Minneapolis City collection will be available. I believe Dan has been setting the tent up and that stuff looks great. I got some in the mail the other day too. I'm really pumped about that. I went all black. Nice. So yeah, check it out. Be there Saturday. It's going to be a good time.
All right. Well, now on to more World Cupness. excuse me.
More
World Cupiness. Unless you were living under a rock, you now know that thanks to Christian Pulisic literally putting his nuts on the line for the United States, we are through into the knockout rounds and take on the Dutch this Saturday, as we noted. And you can check out that out at Uta Pills, another Uta Pills drop in there. We went into the Wayback Machine and took a look at how we did in our predictions, Nate. So I said that it would be your typical how we get through in every World Cup: win, loss, draw. We draw Wales, which we did. We beat England, which we should have. And we lose to Iran because we're already through. That didn't happen. We actually beat them. So a little bit of a different prediction. So I was kind of way off, but who cares, right? We're through.
I was close. I think I went draw, loss, win. I thought we would have beat Iran. Mm-hmm. And I had high hopes for Wales at least to be respectable, but they were not. So, oh well. What actually happened, of course, that 1-1 draw to Wales, the 0-0 draw to England, and the 1-0 win versus Iran. Did not expect, honestly, us to do as well as we did against England. The group play by the guys in the Stars and Bars was interesting, to say the least. I would say very inconsistent, very up and down, ending on a nail biter. What was your take on things in the three matches, John?
Well, first and foremost, I want to talk about my English viewing situation. So I was back in Milwaukee with all my buddies, and we were actually at a British pub that my buddies own. So they put a screen outside. It was like 50 degrees out, sunny. It was awesome. It felt very much like a European feel. And then there was probably another like 500 people inside, and very heavy contingent on the away side. So tons of British people were there, and they were loud, chanting, singing, like totally into it. And then the whistle blew, and for about 15, 20 minutes, they were still loud. And then for the remaining 70 minutes, they shut their mouths and were very, very worried, which then got, amped all of us Stars and Bars supporters up, and we started giving it back to them, and they had nothing to say. I will say that the funniest moment of the entire day for me was when this, like, I don't know, he must have been like 80 years old. This 80-year-old British guy, like Harry Maguire, had that header opportunity where he was like back, like we like lost, and then back post on the corner. He had he had like the wide open, the most wide open chance for the British, and he just slid off of his head, and this old man goes, in his British accent, "Harry Maguire, you fetus."
What?
He called him a fetus. And I don't know, I don't really know if that had any other connotation other than like an unborn child. But then the whole rest of the half, every time he got the ball, like that half of the bar was like, "Fetus, fetus." And it was hilarious. But anyways, if you're going back down, I just lost my place here. If you're going back down to what I saw from the group stages, I think number one for me was that Greg Berhalter did what he needed to do with this roster selection. And in some areas it has paid off, in other areas it has not. I think how it paid off when the roster selection was, he truly did build the roster for the teams were playing to get out of the knockout round. I thought I was really, really smart there. And I kind of saw that coming a little bit when we did the roster announcement came out, however shitty that experience was that we talked about. But I thought you did a good job. Selecting Tim Ream. I mean, when you and I were together, I was like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is the Tim Ream redemption tour here. And he's been nothing but fantastic. Then you talk about the inclusion of Cameron Carter-Vickers in because he was plays in Scotland, and in Scotland a lot of teams sit back. That's what Iran was going to do. I thought that was great. I thought that the inclusion of Haji Wright, even though he played awful in the game against Iran and did really nothing and could have cemented the game for us, I think that that was a great inclusion against England, because he was just like going elbow to elbow with both of the British center backs. We'll talk about another guy here in a second, but I thought it was good. It was good. His roster with what he had, was good by and large. This is the plot with who plays, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like the Gio Reyna stuff aside, we'll talk about that in a little bit as well. But him not being included, there, something has to be going wrong. And it's not a fitness thing. I also think that the substitutions are coming in at a point where it's like, oh my God, we need to bunker down and try to get a point. And it's like, no, we actually need to be substituting fresh, active legs, because we have a whole bench full of them. And let's continue to go for that second goal. And if we get scored on, we would be in the same spot we would be, or we eventually were in, where you're chasing a goal now, potentially, or we actually were chasing a goal, and you just put in five defenders. So I think, and he's going to it with either 40 minutes, 30 minutes, 20 minutes left to go in a game. That's way too early to start subbing in, including against Iran. I thought at the 20 minute mark, we were going to a five back and we were starting to weather a lot of the storm. as a result of going defensive, where we were sitting back and they were all over us when their defense was tired because all day they were tracking active runners. And then those active runners were now being asked to defend and they were tired. And then it's like, okay, now hit on the counter, and you're hitting on the counter to Yunus Musa, who's playing out wide, and the poor guy was dead. And it's just like, why is he still in? Like,
yeah, and then he had to, yeah, I'm with you. And then the fact that he had to run track back as hard as possible to help defend, like.
And I know like Gio Reyna's not a defensive juggernaut, but like you brought some players with you that you could have used, you know, that have legs. So I thought like that's there. His decision making has been bad, but it was good to get us through first halves of three games. And then the whole England game. And I read an article yesterday about during qualifying, we had away at Mexico, home against maybe Trinidad, and then away at Costa Rica. So you had, and we had to get at least 4 points to qualify. And people were saying, like, don't go to Azteca with your strong guys. Have your strong guys play at home, beat the shit out of Trinidad, and then go to Costa Rica, you know, potentially needing at least a draw with your strongest rested legs. Berhalter said, screw that. We're going to Mexico and we're going to give it to them. They did that and came away with a scoreless draw, which they should have won that game. If not for some lucky moments. And then we beat the shit out of Trinidad, ended up taking care of business against Costa Rica. We qualified for the World Cup. I think Greg took that same thing into this tournament, where it was like against, you know, we didn't beat Wales. We should have. We didn't beat Wales. You could have gone into the game against England and played for the draw, but we didn't. We took it to them. And then we knew what we had to do. We took care of business in the third game. So I thought, like, he's making good choices, but, like, some of them you're like, come on, dude. Like, yeah. they're rookie mistakes. Mm-hmm. I think we're playing, like, a U.S. team that should be playing to get results. But, like, we're active. We're pressing. We're reacting to how the other team's playing against us instead of us trying to be like, we're going to be a possession-focused team that builds as a unit. And we saw in qualifying, like, that shit doesn't work with our guys. Like, get the ball forward. win tackles, like, create chances, and then hopefully the goals come with the chances. So I think we're there, but the goals aren't coming in volume. We don't have that out-and-out goal-scoring striker that most countries have. So that's a little – we have to be creative in how we find goals. I think Tim Weah has been playing great with, like, what he's doing off the ball. He still has those moments where he'll, like, take the extra touch and it'll go out of bounds, and you're like, you just laced like a 20-yard pin perfect cross, and now like it just goes off your foot out of bounds. Like when you could have just crossed it in the first place. Like you just showed us you can do it. Do it again. So I think that we're playing good soccer. I think our MMA midfield of McKinney, Musa, and Adams is just like it truly is the engine in the room. I mean, it's those three guys together. McKinney's had some faults, but that ball he played in to Dest to set up the Pulisic goal against Iran, that's the kind of stuff that we didn't really have out of a midfield three. We always had one for sure good center midfielder and like two guys that are okay or one that totally sucks.
We're throwing like Roldan out there or something and just crossing fingers.
Like fucking Kyle Beckerman. Like he should have never been in the World Cup.
You hate that guy so much. I love it.
But he sucks. He's terrible. He should never been a starter in a World Cup, let alone in big games. But we never had three solid center midfielders. And now we have like 3.5, maybe four, if you're looking at some of the subs that haven't really played a lot yet. So, but like, how much was I right when I was like, if Tyler Adams goes down, we're screwed. I mean, he has been, he's definitely going to make the all tournament team. And if he doesn't, it's a Qatari Bucks situation where they pay off getting their whole midfield in. He is so special. And just like, can you just see the dollars in his bank account growing after this World Cup? Like Leeds is going to be able to, they're going to either have to pay him more money or he's going to go to a really big European club because he's shown he can do it on the world stage against the best competition. And then finally, last point here. Why did you bring DeAndre Yedlin if Shaq Moore is getting minutes? Like, Shaq Moore is
I'm awful. With you on that.
Like, he's a good MLS outside back, But like Yedlin has European experience. The only guy literally who has World Cup experience, he's better with the ball at his foot, and he has equal, if not better, speed to track back. And he's always willing to go into a tackle. So like, is Berhalter worried that he's going to, in a crucial moment, Yedlin's going to lose the plot and go into a tackle and get sent off or foul in a bad situation? That might be the only reason why Shaq Moore is playing. But at the same time,
Shaq Moore almost lost us the game some really bad possession play. He was frantically defending and was lucky he didn't get it. I mean, it was definitely not a handball, but he was lucky that the money didn't roll up to the fourth official or to the VAR guy in the booth and make him call for the hand. You know what I mean? Like, Shaq Moore has not been the defender off the bench to depend, you know, that we needed to not at all.
And then if you look at the Iran game, like we talked about Yunus Musa being moved out wide and being like just out of gas. Like, where was the sub to bring in Yedlin to basically be, a seventh defender, but also have the blazing speed and the legs to go on the counter? And and he's good with the ball. So it's like, come on, dude. Like, I could see it. Like, you just got use your brain, Greg. Use your brain.
I'm with you, John. I think that Tyler Adams is obviously the MVP of this team for now. Despite the goals coming from other places, it doesn't matter. Like, he is all over the field. He is pressing when necessary. He steps when when he can recognize that the play is about to break down, right? I don't know how many times in both the England game and the Iranian game where he was able to sniff out a problem about 3 seconds before it materialized.
Right? Yeah, cause the other team to go backwards when they could turn, typically have space to turn and play a ball. Everything about his play has been fantastic.
Brilliant. The other thing I definitely agree with you on is this issue of like, where are the goals coming from? Where's our number nine, right? Like, I think no one in that position is automatically dangerous. Josh Sargent looks like he's hurt. So he was playing fine, but he
his hold-up play was really good, I thought. Like, for a guy his size, like his hold-up play and his movement.
If that's the goal, so that you can free up guys like Pulisic and Weah, then
he's doing his job.
I'm cool with that, right? But on the other hand, like, you kind of want your attack, at least someone in the attack, to be automatically dangerous when they touch the ball, right? Mm-hmm. And I think when you look at Tim Weah had one goal, had his goal against Wales. I think he probably should have had a goal. That second goal against Iran that they called offside was clearly not. He was looking dangerous there. And all his runs where he's threatening are coming in the central area. So scoot him over, let him make his runs, and then Brendan Aaronson needs to start.
Yeah, or Gio.
I think Aaronson coming on for Pulisic at the half, the kid was unstoppable. He was everywhere, and I think that is what I love about this team so far in the tournament is how many guys we have that are just like, oh shit, Aaronson showed up out of nowhere. Tyler Adams made an amazing step. Like Yunus Musa coming in at the clutch time. Like, these guys are the movement between our midfield and the forward line is really, really good. How fluid they are. I just think that it's going to be important to keep that going and make sure that those, you know, six guys continue to be on the same page against the Netherlands. And this is why I say this next thing, and I know Gio Reyna is a controversial topic, but I think he can't come on late at this point. He needs to be in the game early get him in the 60th minute or something. But doing what they did to him against England, putting him on late, he doesn't understand what's going on, what people are looking for.
He's not in the game.
He got in the way of what would have been an automatic goal. I think there was a pass that was in the England game that was, I think, meant for Weah on the right side, and Reyna thought it was for him, and he got in the way of it and then lost the ball immediately when Weah was wide open with a run on net. So I think that he needs to be able to either be allowed to find the game and come into it, or I don't know what to do with them. It's really a weird situation. But I'm with you. And then agree Yedlin over Moore. I think Shaq Moore is scary
there or just... Scally over more. Like
yeah, right.
Or the equipment guy. There are the trainer.
A couple people on this team that are, when if you're gonna put them in, and you need a clutch performance out of them, it's gonna be a little scary. So
one thing that I forgot to mention is I give my credit to Walker Zimmerman for what he did to help seal that game out. Like, he clearly got dropped because he made a really bad mistake against Wales.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. and like, he didn't not play bad against England, but like, to get dropped for a crucial game, that can mentally take a toll on you. And then you're being asked to go in and you're like, yeah, you know, like, I know it's an important game for my country and myself, but like, you can easily switch off. But he was like amped up. You know, like
I'll say though, Cameron Carter-Vickers looked good, dude. Like the reasoning that they talked about on the broadcast was, well, you know, he plays in the Scottish League where a lot of teams are going to play like Iran plays, or like where Iran's going to play like a lot of those teams. And it's like, I get it, but Vickers also was able to sniff out that counter. Like, he knew when it was coming and he knew where to go. And I don't know. I think it's nice to have the problem of three
performance center backs. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So let's look at what we've got facing us on Saturday, John. The freaky deaky Dutch. How do you think this is going to play out? Because Netherlands not been great so far. I mean, yeah, they got out of their group on top with 7 points, but you know, they beat Senegal 2-0. They drew to Ecuador, and then they had Qatar. Like, pretty soft group.
Yeah, and they didn't necessarily blow the doors off.
They did not. They did not. And I think if it wasn't for Cody Gakpo, I don't know where the goals are coming from this Dutch team.
The Gak attack is back, Jack. this one's USA all the way, baby. This game very much reminds me so much of 2002 when we had to play Mexico in the knockout games. And it's not because, like, I don't know, whatever you want to think about Mexico, how we know them, whatever. But it's a tale of playing styles that currently, like, favor one team over the other, not necessarily like the personnel on the field, but the style of play. You know, the U.S. right now, their style of play is organized defensively and then you utilize overpowering in your center midfield. And then what that does is it frees up your outside defenders to attack and then movement up front. From a Dutch perspective, the Dutch have way more individual talent than we do. They play very passive. They can be easily overrun by physicality and athleticism, which newsflash, the United States is a ton of that. And their back line's a little slow, and their wingers don't like to be pinned back and defend. They want to get forward and attack, and they want to have the ball and move off of it. So if you're looking at like a Memphis Depay, or you're looking at a Bergwijn, those guys don't want anything to do with someone like a Serginho Dest or an Anthony Robinson, who would rather they just attack all day. And so if they can pin them back, Cody Gakpo is playing out of his mind, and he is that good. We have to deal with him, but can we deal with him with a 2-on-1, 3-on-1 defensive advantage? Because Bergwijn and Depay are being stuck back defending our outside defenders. So something to look at there. Their midfield, not great at being pressed. When they get the ball, look out. They're very, very, very good. Their back line, like I said, slow. Doesn't like to necessarily track runners. They have some outside speed, but centrally, like, we've seen a lot out of Van Dijk in the Premier League. When has he had problems with active, fast, shorter strikers that kind of cause him fits on marking?
When you consider some of their better defenders, like Dumfries is sometimes all the way forward.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm talking about again, like pinning them back in outside, you know, whipping the balls in. Going to be tough to win headers against the Dutch center backs and their goalkeeper, but like, we might be able to get more of like a 2v1 type advantage, or some of those balls whipping in behind, in between the center backs and the goalkeeper, like some danger spots there. So I think that like the U.S. is still the underdog because of pound for pound talent. We thrive in that environment, Nate. We really do. Next would be you mentioned Gio. Let's stop messing around here and let him do what he does best. I think physicality is I think a reason why Greg hasn't gone with him. He shies away from contact. He's a little fragile currently, but when the ball's on his foot, man, like the guy can do stuff with it. So to me, this Dutch team actually favors what he can do. Do I think that Greg's going to go to him? Probably not. But if I were the head coach, I've just pissed off a guy who's got supreme talent. And if I go, all right, go in and prove it to me. Prove me I was wrong. And with that chip on his shoulder, with what he can do with the ball, you might catch lightning in a bottle. And then all of a sudden you've unlocked another way to beat teams that you could use if you get past the Dutch. So something to look at there. Next, injuries are a concern and require adjustments, but Greg Berhalter, I know you're listening. Do not be stupid. So, stick to the plan that works. Like at this point, Sherman back in. You stick with Cameron Carter-Vickers. You stick with if Josh Sargent is healthy. If not, you go to Haji Wright, even though he didn't perform because he's gotten game minutes. You don't all of a sudden insert Ferreira. You don't move Wea over. You don't mess with the formula, even though you think on paper it might look good. Go start with what works and then adjust off of it. Just don't be stupid, Greg. Like, it's not time to be stupid. So if I'm wrapping a bow around all of it, Nate, I really struggle with what a final result could look like. I wrestled between option B, which was 0-0 draw, we win in penalties. But my final result is going to be a 1-0 result for the U.S. in stoppage time.
All right. For me, John, these are two teams that, you know, we haven't seen in the World Cup for a while. They both missed it last time, which I forgot about that with the Netherlands as I went back and looked. But I'm going to say the concern for me is that our team is younger. And like you said, a couple players are questionable with injury. I'm a Minnesota raised, Minnesota born fan through and through. So I got to be pessimistic about this. I'm going to go with the experience of the Dutch. I'm going to predict a heartbreaker. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be a Dutch win 2-1 in extra time, hearkening back to the 2014 way that we were knocked out. I think that the Dutch are just going to have more depth than us, and they're going to be able to grind it out longer than us. And that's going to be, it's going to be a long and tough game.
Question for you, Nate, playing devil's advocate. Yeah. What did the U.S. team in this World Cup do or not do versus an even better British team that you don't think is going to work against the Dutch?
I think that they did everything great against England. Actually, I think where the concern is how they fell off and lost the 3 points to Wales, and how they almost, you know, how it was just such a nail biter at the end against Iran. And I think that I'm not sure that's sustainable for an additional 30 minutes is all I'm
saying. It's going to have to be, Nate. It's going to have to be.
All right. Well, let's talk about the U.S. U.S. Netherlands game is going to be great, but there are other teams playing and they are continuing to play. We got about 30 minutes until another pair of, I guess,
very
four
crucial
teams, pair of games,
very crucial games.
Yep. Kick off. So let's talk about what's going on around the rest of the cup. Looking at the table, the round of 16 is getting set. I think we've only got four teams that we're trying to fill out at this point, as it is Thursday afternoon. So let's revisit our group predictions and talk about what's been going on, starting with Group A. Group A is Holland, Ecuador, Senegal, Qatar. We already know that the Netherlands are through. They will be playing us on Saturday. And Senegal is through. John, you picked who?
Holland and Senegal.
You did it. So did I. I think this was an easy pick. Ecuador, another young team. Qatar, only there because they're the host team. They were clearly not prepared for a World Cup. as sad as it was for some of those, for some of the members of the audience.
Yeah, poor sheiks, poor rich billionaire sheiks.
You know, the only possibility was that maybe Ecuador would have pulled an upset, and they almost did, but Senegal in the end came on strong. So
yeah, my general thoughts are like, people look at like a country like Ecuador and they're like, yeah, Ecuador, they made it. What they don't realize is like who they had to go through in Kabul to qualify.
Colombia.
Like, yeah. They're at Peru. Mm-hmm. Like some really, really Paraguay, like some really, really good teams that didn't make the World Cup, and they did. So I wasn't surprised at how well they did. I predicted, like, look out for Senegal. They don't have Mane, but they are a type of team that with the rest of the cast could potentially be a team that that could be one of the first African nations or the first African nation to like make it far in a World Cup. So I knew they would get through, but Ecuador, I really thought they had some magic there after the game started. I really did. Like Ener Valencia, like just give that guy all the money at some club, and just, even if you bring him off the bench, like that guy can score and like lead a team by himself. Like there's no reason why he should be at like a mid-table Premier League team. He should be starting or on the bench. What's that?
I thought he played in Mexico.
I think he moved. Well, he was at Aston Villa, but but anyways, so yeah, I think this group pretty much did its thing.
Yep. Group B, John. We already talked about most of this.
We already went through this one. England, yeah, I thought it was going to be England, then USA. General thoughts on this one was, come on, Wales.
Oh, I was so bummed. Like, I'm a big Wales guy, John. You know, everything you read about the team is just so positive. They're just like love to play with each other. So it was definitely a bummer that they couldn't show up and do any better in the group stage. I thought maybe they would have given us a run for our money just by results in other games, but oh well. On to Group C, John. This was the nail biter that resolved itself yesterday. Oh my God! This group had everything, because it's Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and Poland. And I mean, the group started out with a shocker with that Argentina loss to Saudi Arabia. Argentina, John, in that first game looked bad. They looked like they had no idea what they were doing out there. I think a lot of people are relieved. I'm just surprised at the end of the day that they were able to pull it all together and be able to come out of this group on top.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I selected Argentina and Poland. You went with Argentina and Mexico for obvious Morales reasons. but I didn't think that Mexico was ever going to get out of this group. And I will mention that when the rest in peace, Diego Maradona, when he led Argentina in the 1986 World Cup, when they ended up winning, they also lost their first game to, I don't remember who it was to. I was only 5 years old, but they, I remember them losing their first game to a team that they should not have lost to. This is what happened again. I'm still on the bandwagon that it's Messi's World Cup to lose. And I think he's only starting to get going. But man, Mexico, come on guys. If you play that last 20 minutes, you played the last 20 minutes, the whole World Cup, you are on top of the group. And, you know, I always like being with Mexico, but not qualifying for the knockout rounds for 7 straight World Cups. There's some troubles in paradise, Nate.
Yeah. I mean, this is the group performance by Mexico that claimed the first manager of the tournament, Tata Martino, gone.
I'm surprised he even went home on the team plane.
I mean, you got to at least figure out how to get back home. But I think what surprised me, John, was Mexico's complete inability to score goals.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. You know, that's at the bad end what bit them.
Too bad. So sad.
Sorry, Mexico.
Group D.
Another shocker, I'll say.
Yeah. The France, Australia, Denmark, Tunisia group. It ended up being France and Australia going through the Socceroos. Getting through to the knockout round. Good to see some camera time for old Timmy Cahill. He was at the game. I predicted France and Denmark, but I also said that Tunisia is a side you got to look out for. And they definitely were. They were a decent squad, but they couldn't pull it off. You selected France and Denmark, like I did. My thoughts on this one was, like, remember the Iceland run in the Euros?
Yeah.
And how, like a country that's not necessarily soccer rich just, like, bands together and plays, like, organized. Like, if you're going to beat one of us, you got to beat all of us. And if you're gonna swing, we're all gonna swing back, kind of thing. That's Australia. That's what they came to this tournament, like, tuned up and ready to go. And it's great to see. I like that story. You know, like, it's good to watch a country like that play, even if when they get up against, you know, some of the juggernauts, can they do it for a whole tournament? Probably not, but you can root for it.
Yeah, if this is one of those games where you know, the concurrent games are interesting because you know what's happening on the other channel, and some people in the crowd might know, but you know the guys on the field don't. So to have watched Tunisia playing so hard against the, I guess what you could say is the French B squad, and coming away with the win only to not advance was a bit heartbreaking, tough to watch. But you know, this is the kind of drama that we love the World Cup for, and that might never happen again. As they open up the field to 40,000 teams.
Can we double back real quick to Group C in what was happening yesterday with that Mexico almost got put into a situation where yellow cards were the problem for them not to go through?
Which is, like, pretty classic. It's like, maybe that's why you don't two-footed tackle people.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like... but yeah, I was watching that game and I was like, I'm thinking, like, okay, what? I'm going through the tiebreakers. I'm like, all right, so there's head-to-head. Like, there's goals scored against each other. Like, all this stuff is tying. And I was like, I wonder what the fifth and sixth tiebreakers are. So then I go on the old Google machine. I was like, oh, FIFA Fair Play and then a coin toss. And I was like, oh, man. What a way for Mexico to go out if it goes to either of those. And then right as I said that, one of the Poland players goes in, like, over the ball and gets a yellow card. And I was like, yes, I want a coin toss. I want the coin toss to happen. I want to see what that, like would ESPN televise the coin toss? Like, or does it happen in a back room in some, like, shady den? Like, what's going to happen here?
You know, I would have.
But anyways, okay.
We had a little cameo from Elvina there for a second. That was fun.
Yeah. Hey, girl. All right, Group E,
this is the one that is coming together today at 1 p.m. In just 20 minutes here. It's Spain, Costa Rica, Germany, and Japan. Still yet to figure this out, but Spain, Japan, Costa Rica, Germany, as you look at the group, the group standings, it's pretty crazy. The fact that Costa Rica beat Japan really threw this group for a loop. Germany held on for dear life to draw Spain this last weekend. Spain is through regardless. It's really Japan through with a draw, Germany through with a win, and a Japan loss. Like, this is kind of Germany's worst nightmare here, John.
Yeah, being knocked out two tournaments in a row for a country that has that much success in a tournament is tough. But I was watching an interview today with the space invader himself, Thomas Mueller, and he was like, We've figured it out. Like, with what we did in our performance against Spain, like, we figured out how this group needed to click to play together, because Germany has kind of been, you know, after they won in 2010, they've kind of just been like a powerhouse without a plan. It, because they had a lot of aging stars. You had to replace the World Cup's all-time leading goal scorer in Miroslav Klose. And then, you know, you had you did it with, like, Timo Werner, you know, like,
right.
And so they had to, like, figure a lot of stuff out, but he was saying, like, we think we figured it out. And, but he also said as a country, we're susceptible to certain styles of play. And in the past, we've just been lucky in a World Cup that we don't play against those type of teams. But when we do come across some of those teams, like a Japan that is relentless for 90 minutes, we can't get going. So, like, that's how teams beat us. And he's like, and he was saying, like, it's not even like, he's not afraid to say it. It's a reality. You just got to go back and watch the tape. But he was saying that, like, look what we did against Spain and what we can and what we potentially do in this next game. I don't see Germany not beating Costa Rica, to be honest.
And no, the Costa Rica victory against Japan was an absolute, like, fluke. They were so lucky.
Yeah, and but I look at, like, Japan-Spain. Spain's probably going to rest some of their stars because they're already through. But, like, their B squad's still really good. So, like, but are they capable to withstand that relentless attack? And I did say, Nate, that, like, Japan's really good and they can mm-hmm. cause fits for people. I selected Germany and Spain. I still think that can happen. You also did, but I would not be surprised if Japan goes through.
That would be sad for German fans.
All right. Group F, that just finished up moments ago. Belgium, Canada, Morocco, and Croatia. Croatia goes atop the group with Morocco, the second African country to go through. I noted that Croatia was my guys. That Belgium has the talent, but they are for sure, what have you done for me lately, squad, that could easily disappoint in a major tournament again. Look what happened. And then I basically said it's a coin flip for Canada and Morocco to go through. You went with Belgium and Croatia.
Yeah, I was still holding the torch for Belgium, and it turns out I was way off. They were awful.
But I went with Canada and Croatia, and I thought Canada, like, coming out of qualifying, like, I was really impressed with them, but they fell apart, man.
Yeah.
Like today they had an opportunity that they totally threw away. So yeah, that one was an interesting one. Morocco, their center midfield is large and in charge, man. They are a group that it tackles hard. They get forward. They can hit shots from distance. They're no nonsense. They just do their jobs. And they're a team that, depending upon how the draw and the knockout round shakes up, they could potentially take out another big team.
They could do some damage, yeah.
And do some damage.
Group G, everyone in these last groups play tomorrow. So we'll figure out how this is going to shake out. Still yet to play, but we're looking at Brazil and Switzerland are the leaders in Group G. Brazil with 6 points, Switzerland with three, with Cameroon and Serbia rounding him out with 1 point each. Brazil is through regardless of anything. I think they were the first team. Brazil or France were the first team to outright qualify for the line for the round of 16. So they might just put their, like, U16 lineup in and see what happens. Swiss are through. All they need is a draw. So the winner of Serbia Cameroon tomorrow is going to go through with a Swiss loss or a draw. This is all one of those nail biters, one of those late games that's going to come down to, like, math.
Yeah, for sure. I said Brazil, and then I said Serbia, which Serbia was one of the teams that I really thought was going to carry on the back of their qualifying record. They have not performed. Can't really find the back of the net, but Cameroon hasn't really done anything for me, and the Swiss are still the Swiss. So I still think that Serbia could go through.
Yeah, I mean, I think I said Brazil, Switzerland. I didn't give the Serbians any respect that maybe they are due, and they are playing some high scoring soccer. It's just going to be all about this matchup, which is going to be Serbia, Switzerland. You know, a matchup that just like in 20, just like the last World Cup 2018, it's got some political undertones to it. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, there's been a couple of political undertones, like the leadership in Iran basically saying they're gonna, like, imprison and execute the players. That's a really cool story to wake up.
Oh my god,
that's a really cool story to wake up to when you're not only the team that lost, but the team that won. You're like, oh my god, I beat those guys and they might die. Oh, what did I do? Right. So as we wrap up the groups here, Group H, Portugal, Ghana, Uruguay, and South Korea, still yet to play, but currently sits in a shocking Portugal, Ghana, South Korea, with Uruguay bringing up the heap. Portugal is through regardless of the matches. Ghana's through with a draw. South Korea are through with a win versus Portugal. And Uruguay needs a win with a clean sheet and a bucket full of goals versus Ghana, but also needs South Korea to lose to Portugal. Plus other math equations. So this one, we both thought that it was a Portugal Uruguay. Ghana maybe a little dangerous. Not surprised if you'd see him up there, but I never thought that Uruguay would be pulling up the heap.
No, me neither. And I think that, you know, it's we should have looked at Uruguay's roster and been like, wow, they've got Cavani and Suarez as kind of their like top scoring options. Those guys are combined 70 years old. Like, there's going to be some problems there. I know Valverde is amazing, but that's about all they have, unfortunately. So, you know, I'm going to say, John, that for me, Group H is kind of the most, this is one of those groups where like I did not wake up at four, or I did not watch the 4 a.m. games and did not really care to. Like, I'm just bored with this group.
This group sucks
because Portugal is so shitty. Like, Ronaldo sucks so bad. Like, I'm just gonna say this. He knew he didn't score that goal,
right?
You know what I mean? He knew it didn't hit his head, and instead of turning around and being like, Bruno, that was your goal, amazing,
he fucking celebrated
and continued to celebrate as if he scored. What a dick, man. Group H is boring to me. I don't really care who wins at this point.
Ronaldo is such a penis. Like, this guy, like, I don't know how else to describe it. Like, I've listened and I've read, you know, accounts of his time at United, and a lot of the old guard, like Giggs and Scholes and Ferdinand, said, like, when he came in, he was very much a child who, like, just was so talented. And he never had a chance to grow up, because he was so good and went at such a young age that everyone just kind of told him yes. And then he went from being a child when he came in, a teenage child when he came in, to now growing into an adult child who, like, still no one says no to. Yeah. And he doesn't get it. He has no social cues. Like, he doesn't know how to act in the real world. And he's starting to, like, let it bleed over in his game, because he doesn't have a lot left in the tank. He's still supremely talented, but he doesn't have a lot left in the tank. And it's like, dude, like, you can't go off and, like, pop off about your club team to fucking Piers Morgan, of all people, who's an Arsenal fan, who's just, like, lapping it up, like, oh, yeah, bring me the story. You know, like
anything to shit on Manchester on United, right?
Yeah, and then you go and you do it right before a World Cup when you're, like, you need to focus and your team needs to focus, and instead you have, like, you know, your other starters on your team having to field questions about your stupid ass. Like, it's all a distraction, and it all revolves around one guy who thinks he's, like, God's gift, which he kind of is, but he's acting like it instead of, like, Messi, who is God's gift, who just plays soccer and, like, doesn't care. And, like, oh, real quickly about him, that whole thing with Canelo Alvarez, did you read that?
No.
So Canelo Alvarez, the Mexican boxer, like, one of the greatest of all times, saw, like, a video on Instagram of Messi, like, celebrating the locker room and then getting up and, like, stepping on what looked like a Mexican flag, but it was just a jersey that someone, like, traded, and it was on the changing room floor, and he just, like, got up to, like, walk away and, like, stepped on it. And Canelo Alvarez was like, I hope I never see you in public because you disrespected my country. And that was right before the last knockout game. And then Messi's sitting there with a penalty kick, like, what do I do here? Canelo, remember when you talk shit to me? Well, I'm just going to miss this one to rip your heart out.
I didn't even know that. I didn't think about that. I was going to say, wow, Messi missed a penalty.
Yeah, he missed it very uncharacteristically easy for Messi. So I was I wonder if he did it on purpose.
I think, you know, if it wasn't for Ronaldo, I'd like this Portugal team. You know, you got João Félix, you've got Fernandes, you've got Jota, right? Like, these are fun players to watch, and it's a really, you know, like, generally I really like a lot of these Portuguese players, but man, Ronaldo is so hateable. So don't care, Group H.
Yeah, fuck you, Group H.
Well, that's gonna be a wrap, John, on this week's show. We got more soccer to watch. We gotta shut down here and catch the 1 o'clock game. So thank you everyone for listening, and thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, FootballStadiumPrints.com. If you're in the market for supremely curated soccer focused graphic design on anything from mugs to t-shirts to sweet prints of city icons like Eudor Nelson Field and the old club shop, you head over to FootballStadiumPrints.com, fill your cart up, and don't forget, use code CROWS10 for 10% off everything you purchase. All U.S. orders are going to ship right here from the States. No international shipping charges, no shipping delays. You should get it in time for the holidays. I don't want to make any guarantees. I don't know. 2023 memberships are now available. You got to jump in early and get in on it. You get that voice that helps you shape the club for next year. You know, votes are going to be on the horizon, and members are going to get early access to all sorts of upcoming city announcements. And as a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3, so you can consider that charitable gift to the club that loves to give back in advance of the close of 2022. And if you're interested in getting a hold of you, of John and I, we have made it simple. You got to hit the club up on Twitter at MPLSCitySC, or you can contact us at the show on Twitter while it lasts at The People's Pitch, or email us mcscpodcast@gmail.com. And that is all for this week. I'm Nate. That was John. We're going to see you at Ooda Pills. As Ian Dark says, go, go, USA. We'll be back with our knockout round thoughts after all the knockout rounds are completed. And as always,
you got hooked. Ronaldo's a penis.